This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
For every 5 nasal scents we have, dogs have 2,500.
Unexpected Elements from the BBC World Service. Search for Unexpected Elements wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Emily Wither, and this is Heart and Soul, exploring personal approaches to spirituality from around the world. I'm at a protest in Turkey. Tonight, demonstrators are calling for an end to violence against women. The women chant, "We are not quiet, we are not scared, we will not obey." I'm with Rumeysa, a Muslim feminist. She explains she used to stand out from the crowd when she came to women's protests wearing her headscarf.
I knew all the women with headscarf, actually. I could, you know, see a woman with headscarf, point it out and say hi to them. But after 5 years, I don't know any of them, actually. So it's huge.
Rumeysa grew up believing activism was part of her religion.
How I grew up through my father's understanding of Islam was like, you have to be an activist if you are Muslim. So I learned that if you are a good Muslim, you have to be an activist because you have to change things through the good one. So I personally didn't feel any kind of a contradiction there.
But others did see a contradiction. And she's been working for years to carve a space for Muslim women inside the civil society and feminist movements in Turkey that have traditionally identified as secular.
My secular friends, and also as the mainstream feminist movement, and even the leftist movement is secular in Turkey, you can say that they were like so shocked to see this. Because this Islamist understanding of the religion is something unique as well, not a huge number of people approach the religion like this, so they didn't understand what we were doing, actually. So, you know, the hard part was making people understand why I was making this kind of demonstrations. It was a little bit weird for the first times. Everybody wanted to take photos with me. I was on all the news and everything.
Rumeysa says in recent years there's been a growing number of women in headscarves joining demonstrations, linked to everything from women's rights to societal change. It's a sign that the Muslim feminist movement is growing here in Turkey and becoming more vocal.
I think we went visible and nobody could now avoid us. So that feminist movement also agreed to accept us. And I think our institutionalization is one of the most important steps there. I think we have a part in it, and I'm really honored for that kind of a change.
Rumeysa co-founded Havla in 2018, meaning strength. It was Turkey's first Muslim feminist association, and it's been steadily growing over the years.
We're trying to provide a space for Muslim women to feel safe in feminist field as well. And like a leverage, they can do whatever they want in the world, in the feminist movement after that. So it's like empowering each other to go out of ourselves.
Muslim feminists are using their understanding of Islamic scriptures to question and challenge their rights within society. But for many, the battle begins at home. Rumeysa loves music. She plays the guitar and sings. That's her song playing in the background. Making music was the first cause she took on as a child, trying to convince her family that she could play on stage and maybe one day do it for a living.
I remember of the hardest time for me about discussion was about making music as a professional thing in my life. So it happened to be discussion around me and my father and my mother. And he was suggesting that music is not something a Muslim person can do. Stage is not for Muslim women. We shouldn't do such a thing. So it's not appropriate for us. And I actually went, I think, 2 or 3 days of thinking on it. And I got back with an idea that if we religious people spend some time on something, we have a responsibility to make it happen. So Muslim people cannot have free time, so that, you know, it should be good for other people. It should be effective enough as we have this precious time that Allah gave us. So that was my argumentation around it. He actually thought about it and agreed with me. So that's how I could have music in my life in a really huge way. But it was, of course, tiring for a child to do that. So I was nearly... all my childhood was like this, about these discussions with my dad. My dad decided to practice Islam around university. So after getting married and trying to raise us, he was really dominant in a way that he's an Islamist, and his understanding of religion was mostly about the political side, the societal side of religion, about the doctrines, about the principles it has. So I was raised like that in a religious family, but not a traditional way, actually.
Was there a moment in your childhood where you questioned your religion or questioned what you were being taught at home?
Even in my adulthood, I haven't in a huge contradiction with my religion. I was really into the idea that Allah exists and we are his creation, their creation. These days I try to have the pronoun they for Allah. We are their creation, and other than that, about the other parts of the religion, as I wasn't grown up in a traditional family, I could actually criticize what I hear, and we would discuss it in the families. In adulthood, actually, it was a little bit challenging in activism, in romantic relationships. After I got to 18, out of teenager years, it was a little bit socially hard to accept in the beginning, but I think I don't have any time that I didn't believe in Allah or I didn't call myself Muslim.
Rumaysa is a divorced single mother. She explains that discussions around her love life eventually led to a breakdown in her relationship with her parents.
My father's truth was something that can't be changed, actually. So we had the discussions, but most of the time his side would be the right one. And I believed in the religion to be like my dad's truths to be, you know, right. The hardest part was having a distinction between my family values and my religion, my understanding of religion. It was the part where the pressure showed itself. Now I'm not seeing my family for 3 years now because of my choice in my life in terms of romantic partnership. And I started to see my father now, and I told them it was pressure and violence, actually, psychological violence to do that. And he started to agree with me.
So are you finally talking to your family again, slowly?
My father only. My mother also still resists to talk with me. The day I decided not to see my family again, I felt relieved. And I was like, my belief, my religion is now free, actually. So that was what I thought. Because there were, in their understanding of religion, of course there was a place to discussion, but the social constructs and social issues were always there to be considered. And gender roles mainly. And after this kind of an divorce with my family, I feel that I felt more free in terms of my spirituality.
So are you saying you had a kind of spiritual awakening when you decided to walk away from your family?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the case, because that made me think about why I believe in Allah, why I call myself a Muslim. So yes, it was a spiritual awakening in a way, and I felt closer to Allah, actually, because there wasn't anyone else now in between us.
It was in young adulthood Rameza got involved in the feminist movement, and she noticed that most of the women around her were secular.
I felt that I was a little bit alone with my religion and my spiritual tendencies and trying to understand issues around religion. So I found myself looking for women like me, and I thought that we could have an institutionalized way of doing this so that it can be concrete and sustainable for other generations, because we have older generations before us, but they didn't get organized. So I didn't want our efforts to be, you know, vanished.
But setting up the group has not been without its challenges. I've come to meet another member of Havla outside their offices. It's hard to find. It's not listed online and there's no sign. So is it a conscious decision to keep the organization's location hidden from the public?
Yes, very much. Because the one that I mentioned was not the first time that a group of men attempted to come here.
Edebe has been telling me about incidents in the past when groups of men have tried to intimidate them.
So in the first years of our association, there was some people who were sharing address on Twitter and saying, this is where they are, let's go. And I don't know, like raid them, seize them, whatever. Then we started to think about hiding our location.
Should we go inside?
Let me find my keys.
You're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service.
I'm Sarah Trelevin, and for over a year, I've been working on one of the most complex stories I've ever covered.
There was somebody out there who was faking pregnancies.
I started, like, warning everybody. Every doula that I know.
It was fake.
No pregnancy.
And the deeper I dig, the more questions I unearth.
How long has she been doing this?
What does she have to gain from this?
From CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's Baby.
It's a long story. Settle in.
Available now.
I'm Emily Wither in Turkey's largest city, Istanbul, talking to women from the country's first Muslim feminist association.
Welcome. We don't go in with the shoes, but I can give you some of these.
Edebe, in her 20s, hands me a pair of slippers. She's been working with Havla for the last 5 years. Dressed in a green headscarf and flowery top, she welcomes me up to the top floor office. Oh, I can see you've got some postcards here. They're really nicely designed.
Yes, we just made them. And we just went to Ankara for a festival and we gave these to people.
So I can see a bunch of women sat on a rug.
Uh-huh.
And they're all holding signs. Can you tell me about what some of the signs say?
The biggest one says, Fıtrat is socially constructed, which is like a joke that we like. Fıtrat is human nature, but it's often used in Turkish rhetoric, the political discourse, as, oh, like, it's women's Fıtrat, like, women's nature requires this. Or it's also very infamous when, like, a natural disaster happens or workplace accident happens, they say, oh, this is like in the fitra of the job, basically a way of justifying whatever messed up thing they're about to do.
So it's like nature's course.
Yeah, very much. Mm-hmm.
And how is it used to apply to women here?
It's usually said that women's fitra like requires them to be stay at home, they should be mothers, you know, they should be very passive, they should not laugh out loud and everything. Like, all of the stereotypes that's just surrounding women. It has a religious connotation. It's basically a way of saying God made us this way, so we should stay this way, which we don't believe to be true.
And there's this one up here in the top corner. What's that one about?
This one I love. It says, we want the nights, the streets, and the mosques as well. It's actually a feminist slogan, but we kind of expanded the slogan by adding the mosques as Muslim women. It means that all of these spaces are male-dominated and we want them to be not just serving men, but also to all of us.
Improving women's spaces in mosques was the first Havla campaign Edebe got involved with. The group also raises awareness about women's legal rights in Turkey, holding workshops on motherhood, divorce, and early marriage. And they work with local councils to reach marginalized women.
Women's spaces in mosques in Turkey are not the best. They're usually the worst kind of, they're like small, they're dirty, because women are not seen as, you know, they need this place. Despite the fact that we are half of the society and we are out in the streets, we're working, we're in the workforce, we need those spaces as much as men do, but they get the best ones. And the reasoning behind that is that women should pray at home, and you would have a lot of people tell you that it's based on a hadith, this is what the Prophet advised, this is what the Quran says, blah, blah, but that's actually not true, because what is better, we go out and we don't pray at all? Is this what people want? So we wanted to improve the places.
Was there a point when you were growing up when you started to question your faith and what you'd been told?
We live in a patriarchal culture, and growing up, I saw the inequalities, the way that I was treated and the way my brother was treated, which is, it's not even comparable. A girl has to grow up like very fast. You have a lot of responsibilities. You have to do some chores. You have to abide by the rules. And if you refuse to comply, your punishment is greater than any punishment your brother could get. You have to be aware of that at a really early point in your life. This is what kind of carried me to this activism. Just a couple months ago, when I went back to my parents' home, I found this old diary, and in which, when I was 14, I wrote this like a feminist manifesto from what I see now. I just like did like a sociological reading of my own family and the inequalities in it. And I remember writing this, and I remember leaving it around in the house for my parents to just like read.
As Edebe got older and started to fight for feminist causes, she found herself caught between two worlds. She believes Turkey's founding principles as a secular state also filters down to civil society groups.
When you're a Muslim activist, you get hate from every possible side, because the supposed your own community, they don't see you as valid, because this is what we actually believe in. But the Muslim communities, they don't believe in that. They're like, oh, like you're trying to look cute to the secular side, you're trying to look cute to the other feminists, like real feminists, but they will never accept you. And we get some reactions from the secular side saying, oh, you can't be both Muslim and feminist, you have to drop these like archaic stuff behind, you have to, you know, liberate. You can't be a hijabi, because hijab is a sign of oppression and feminism is about liberation. So this argument is really disheartening as an activist, as a Muslim woman.
Have you gotten strength from your faith when fighting these battles?
I actually see feminism as a type of jihad, and I know this is like very controversial, but I actually do believe in that, because fighting inequality and fighting a life of dishonor, I think that's really a noble mission, and I think that's what Muslims should stand up for, and this is what the Prophet has done, and this is what I get my inspiration from. And I think as a subject of God, I am equal with all of his other creation, so I have to like act accordingly.
These days, Edebe says she feels more included in the feminist space, and she's proud of everything Havla have achieved.
We carved that space for ourselves. Nobody welcomed us with open arms, but we carved the space, and I'm glad we did. It was not only our right, but it was also a responsibility.
I'm just going to set up the hammock so we can sit down and start talking.
Oh, okay. So is this what you usually do when you come to the park?
Yeah.
I've come to meet another Havla co-founder, Hatice, an English teacher born and raised in Istanbul. She's dressed in a long flowing blue dress and matching headscarf.
I think we're ready.
I'm just getting into the hammock. It's really comfortable.
Yeah, it is.
It's quite relaxing.
You can actually take off your shoes and just go in. You know, it's like a cocoon. I come here and contemplate, think about the future, read a little bit, that's like my meditation space.
Is it harder to be an activist in Turkey if you're a Muslim?
Yes, it is harder to be an activist if you are a Muslim, because people are so ready to judge you with things that you do not support. We're running at the risk of being judged as being supportive of the government at any minute. Even if we are very clear on our views, some things that we say can be interpreted as support for the government, and that is outrageous, because we've been threatened with persecution, we've been threatened with being shut down by the government. So we're walking on a very thin line between the secular and the conservative Turkey, and we're trying to find solutions that could cater to both sides.
Taking on some of these issues, some people might say that you're challenging Islam and that some of these issues are part of Islamic culture. What would you say to that?
I know that I'm not challenging my faith. I know that I'm very sure that I'm doing like God's work. So they can think whatever they want. Like, if I really don't believe in what I'm doing, why should I put myself into this trouble of, you know, like making enemies of everyone?
And was there a particular incident that made you first realize that you might be a feminist?
Oh, when I was 13, I was reading a translation, Turkish translation of the Quran. I saw this verse where it said, hit your wife if they are disobedient. And I took it to my mom and said, if this is true, I will not believe in this. Like, this is not acceptable for me. And my mom is an Arabic teacher. She normally does not really answer these questions. She just gives you a few books and tells you to do your own research. But at that point, I think she realized, you know, like, this is an important moment for my daughter's beliefs. So she actually brought down all the, like, dictionaries and everything. And she showed me, you know, like, how languages and specifically words have different meanings in different periods. And in modern Arabic, yeah, that verb means to hit. But 1500 years ago, it actually meant leave. And at that moment, I felt like, yeah, I couldn't accept the fact that, you know, like, a religion would suggest hitting a woman is an okay thing. And my mom agreed as well. She didn't find it okay. And she, like, right out said, you know, like, this is a wrong translation.
So you started to get involved in activism and you joined a feminist group. Did you feel that the feminist group was the right space for you?
Yeah, I originally didn't join the feminist movement. I first tried like a little bit of different groups, but they were not for me. Muslim people were not very active in opposition movements. So they would see anyone, any Muslim joining them as a spy, or, you know, like, your intentions are questioned, your looks are questioned, your beliefs are questioned. And I didn't want to be questioned on those things. I wanted to feel like I belong.
Hatice's experiences highlight Turkey's severe polarization. Secularism is enshrined in the constitution here. But these days, divisions between secular and religious camps in politics have grown deeper. Turkey's president, Tayyip Erdogan, was seen as a hero for millions of Muslim women after scrapping a ban on wearing headscarves in public institutions in 2013. But after more than 20 years in power, his government have grown increasingly conservative, and a younger generation of religious women feel they're losing their hard-won rights.
all women experience some form of abuse in a patriarchal society. But there are some specific wounds that are very important to me, the ones pertaining to the headscarf ban specifically, because I was 14 and it was such a tough time to go through that kind of psychological violence, psychological abuse by the state on your own without anyone supporting you during high school. So I was the only hijabi in my high school and I had to remove my headscarf every day in front of the school. And that felt like, yeah, that felt like abuse.
Often it can feel here that the political situation with the opposition and President Erdogan's party in power is divided by faith. Mm-hmm. Is that hard to navigate sometimes with your faith?
Yeah, it is very hard because I am very strong in my faith and I can clearly see that, you know, the governing party is only utilizing the religion for their own agendas. And it is heartbreaking to see that.
Do you think you're part of the kind of next generation here that's questioning their, you know, their faith and how they fit into society here?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a part of the new wave of Muslim leaders.
While Havla may have been the first dedicated space for Muslim feminist women, the group have gone on to inspire others.
I'm hearing there are new organizations and new circles that are growing, and that's so lovely to learn. Like in Ankara, a group of women reached out to us and said, we want to create a branch of Havle here. And we said, well, why not create your own foundation? Why create a branch? We can support you, share knowledge and experience with you, and can actually found your own foundation so that this kind of consciousness can be more prevalent in Turkish society.
This edition of Heart and Soul was produced and presented by me, Emily Wither. The editor was Rajiv Gupta.
I'm Sarah Trelevin, and for over a year, I've been working on one of the most complex stories I've ever covered.
There was somebody out there who was faking pregnancies.
I started, like, warning everybody. Every doula that I know.
It was fake.
No pregnancy.
And the deeper I dig, the more questions I unearth.
How long has she been doing this?
What does she have to gain from this?
From CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's Baby.
It's a long story. Settle in.
Available now.